Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. No Thomas Drance. He's back on the show on Monday. He's traveling today. I'm coming to you live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at Rack Steel. Canucks wrap up this road trip tomorrow in Seattle against the Kraken. And as we like to do when the Canucks and the Kraken meet up, we're now joined by one of our favorites here on the show. She's a contributor for the Seattle Kraken. She is Allison Lucan. Allison, thank you as always for making time today. How are you?
I am great, and you are officially my favorite co-host of
the show
because I was mad at Drancer last time for commenting on comparing the Canucks to the California teams, and now he's skipping my city and doesn't even show up for the show today.
That's true. I know. He's not going to Seattle. He's not here on the show. It's actually outrageous for Drancer. So I'm glad. I'm glad that I've cracked the favorite spot of your Canucks Talk co-host. So it's kind of funny. I mean, the Canucks still with a fairly healthy lead on the Kraken in the standings, but these teams starting to kind of inch towards that, like, not even mushy middle, but just where you're like just kind of there. You know what I mean? And look, the Canucks still have a chance to make the playoffs, but there is starting to have a kind of similar feel between these two teams. What has been the downfall for the Seattle Kraken this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a couple things, and we talked about this a little bit before the last game as well. You know, you can see a team like the one that comes back with that crazy comeback in Vancouver and fights their way through and looks full of energy and fight and competitiveness, and you see that same team when they win in Florida coming out of the break, and then it's just the inconsistency of comparing that to what we saw in this last game versus St. Louis, where they simply just were outplayed, outcompeted, weren't ready to start, embarrassed by their own words post-game. So they just haven't been able to be consistent. And then you throw on top of that, they lose their captain, Jordan Eberle, for 3 months to an unprecedented injury. The Yanni Gourde has been out here now for quite some time as well with a hernia. So they haven't had the voices maybe that they always needed in the room to get them through some tough spots, and they haven't been able to find their way to stay at a consistent compete level.
So one of the things that struck me doing a little research into the Seattle Kraken today and just looking at their scoring numbers, you know, very balanced scoring for the Kraken, 9 players in double-digit goals this year, but no one over 20. So it's kind of that balance, but not the high-end guy who's really carrying things or breaking games for the team. How do you go about addressing that issue, you know, not just for the rest of this season, obviously, but next year and beyond if you're the Seattle Kraken?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's a glass half full and a glass half empty to this, right? If you look at the last 10 games, who is the leading point earner? Shane Wright. So that's a positive, right? So you say, how do you go about it? Well, you hope for the continued development of Shane Wright turning into someone who contributes on the score sheet. You look at Matty Beniers starting to look revitalized and rebounding, particularly since Kaapo Kakko joined the team. So you say the youth will continue to step up and improve. Now, on the flip side, you look at someone like Jared McCann, right, who's perennially led this team in goals and points. And I think where he's been stuck this year is kind of in a mishmash of the line combinations. There have been some lines that have been clicking, and he has not always been on one of them. So he ends up on kind of that Island of Misfit Toys line, if you will, sometimes. And so he hasn't been able to be his best self in terms of what I've seen. So I think you have to find some more balance in your lineup, and you have to find ways to improve the forward side of things so that you're not compensating or throwing a bunch of guys together. You know, we know historically that's kind of what that fourth line was 10, 15 years ago, right? It's just
right.
A bunch of big bodies that go out there and do that thing. And that's not how the Kraken like to operate. So optimizing this lineup, I think, is going to be something that the front office looks to do in the offseason.
Yeah, and I mean, we could see some lineup changes, some roster changes for the Kraken here, obviously, in the next week. Brandon Tanev, Yanni Gourde, kind of the pending UFAs that stand out. Do you think the Kraken will be active sellers before the deadline? And beyond the UFAs, are there any moves that you think could potentially happen for this team before next Friday?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we just have to simply look at Ron Francis's track record to say that he's probably going to see if they can get good value back for the UFAs and move them. You know, I don't know. Yanni Gourde has been such a big piece of this team, both on and off the ice. I don't know if this will be a situation like we found out after the fact was with Alex Wenberg last year, where there were conversations of, do you want to stay? And then if there's a mutual decision that there's no agreed landing spot there, that then he does move. But I think that Ron's going to do that. And I think that his phone is available. He's willing to take calls on a lot of these guys because, you know, again, I think, you know, you talk about an expansion roster, you take the best of what you can. You look at the fact that the field was much more limited for Seattle than it was for Vegas with so many GMs being caught off guard. And so I think now is when Francis and his front office team can say, if there's a piece that's not a big, you know, I heard, you know, you guys all on 650 have been talking about what is the future core of the Canucks, right? Mm-hmm. This is a similar question facing the Kraken now is, which we just mentioned those young players starting to step up. So what now do we really want to sculpt this group to look like to be contenders, hopefully sooner than later?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I actually made the point on the show, I don't know if it was earlier this week or last week or something, but with Elias Pettersson playing the way he is and no JT Miller in the lineup, and this was before Quinn Hughes had come back in the lineup, like you look at the Canucks roster and actually kind of, especially at forward, it actually kind of reminds me of like an expansion team lineup at forward where there's a lot of players you like, right? Like Brock Besser and Jake DeBrusk, and, you know, Philip Hedl's done some interesting things, Connor Garland. But there's not that high-end group of player, that one or two high-end players to kind of bring everything together. That's what I was kind of getting at when I'm starting to see some similarities between where the Kraken are at as an actual expansion franchise and the Canucks, where it's like they kind of have that feel of an expansion roster in some ways now.
Well, and this was the joke, right? After last year, we all talked about it going into the season is even before the trades and the carving that happened on the roster this season for y'all, it's, you know, this was a team, the Canucks, coming off a PDO high that got them into the playoffs where they had a darling run. And that's what the Kraken did 2 years ago too, right? So it is kind of funny. It can be painful. It can be interesting, but yeah, the parallels are certainly there for sure.
Kaapo Kakko obviously has been a positive story for the Kraken this year, coming over from the Rangers and, you know, finding a role, finding a way to produce for Seattle. Is that part of the roadmap for the way forward for the Kraken, trying to kind of replicate that Kaapo Kakko deal and hoping that, you know, if you do that enough times, yeah, you get some just good contributors like Kakko has been, but maybe one of those guys really hits and takes that next leap even to a level beyond that once they join Seattle?
Yeah, you know, I was just having this conversation with someone in that, you know, everyone has an opinion of what Ron Francis has done to date, but if you look at the moves he's made when he's had the field available to him in the way that it's kind of open to what he wants. I mean, there you're looking at Elli Tolvanen. You're looking at Oliver Bjorkstrand. Mm-hmm. You're looking at, you know, bringing in Kaapo Kakko. So these, in my opinion, are some really smart moves. And I keep going back to when Kakko came over in trade, you know, Ron Francis joined our pregame show and he was very careful and deliberate about basically saying, we're going to give this player opportunity, but it's up to him to tell us what he's all about. There were no promises from the front office on what would happen. And Kakko has really just seized, you know, top 6 minutes, power play time. I think he's more comfortable maybe in this room because, you know, there was been Elli Tolvanen, a fellow Finn, and right now with Kakko up, the young goaltender, there's another Finn there for him to hang out with. So I think this is just, again, a really nice move. And yes, going from a what will Kaapo Kakko be ? To we like what Kaapo Kakko is, let's keep him around is kind of the message I get from the organization right now.
So last summer, obviously in free agency, the Kraken, they go out, they get Brandon Montour, they get Chandler Stephenson, two of the bigger deals handed out in free agency. It hasn't paid the dividends that they were hoping for. I'm not even just talking about those players, but just obviously the team hoping to take a big step forward hasn't happened this year. Is there appetite to kind of go out and spend big again coming up this summer? I mean, is that something that we could see repeated from Ron Francis and his staff again come free agency this year?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know that they're necessarily saying our goal is to spend a lot, right? But and we all know the nature of free agency, but I think that if the right player became available, particularly with the cap changes that we've all heard about now, I think that there's a sense of urgency both within the organization and within the market to get back to the playoffs. I think, you know, there were just some stumbles this year. I still maintain, you know, that on paper, this team should at least be in the conversation right now, right? In terms of even in the Utahs and the Calgarys and the Vancouvers of it all, there should have been a higher spot here. There just have been some opportunities missed by this group. So I don't know if we're looking at major overhaul per se, but if a piece comes up that they want, will they go after it? I would never say no.
Yeah. Allison, I always love to get your thoughts on the Canucks. And I know you pay attention to the team, even as you're full-time covering the Kraken. And so much of it this year has just been like, man, what is going on? How do we evaluate this team? As you mentioned, coming off the PDO high, the PDO bender of last season and the breakthrough, and then it's just all gone off the rails post JT Miller trade. And now this kind of iteration of the Canucks, how do you look at this team?
Yeah, you know, I think we touched on it a little bit there too of what is the identity now. And, you know, I was listening to you a little bit before I joined, and you were saying, you know, is the playoffs the focus? The playoffs needs to be, what does this group look like? And I think, you know, you can't undersell the ripple effect of whatever was happening in the room that resulted in JT Miller moving. I think that just because he's gone, I don't know that that means a problem is solved. And I think we could all relate to that even in our current jobs, right? Just because a problem is removed, it doesn't fix everything overnight. And obviously PD is struggling with something. You have to make sure. I heard a comment made this morning. It might've been on Halford and Brough of, have they checked in with Quinn Hughes of what he thinks? Is Pettersson going to be back? Because then I think you do invest and keep him around. But if not, you know, Quinn Hughes, in my estimation, you can't lose that player. So I think they're kind of treading water, and it's so hard to fix these kind of problems on the fly in the season. And, you know, it's funny too, you think about if this team barely makes it into the playoffs, do you want to be the Capitals of last year where you're just thoroughly embarrassed and out and swept? You know, I get the dollars and cents of it. I understand that. But in terms of particularly in your market, you know, is that necessarily the right thing? So I think it's a little bit discombobulated right now. I understand why. I think Rick Tocchet, if he wants to stay around, I think that he's the kind of leader that could be a key piece in fixing this. But you have to have a pause, and you're not going to get that till the offseason.
And I just do wonder how much the uncertainty is a factor here as well. You know, you mentioned Tocchet, not far from a guarantee to be back behind the bench next season. And all of a sudden you look at it, like there's a very real world where we're going into training camp next year and there's no JT Miller, there's no Rick Tocchet, there's no Elias Pettersson, there's no Brock Besser. I don't throw Thatcher Demko in there, maybe they sign late. Like in those, you would have said a year ago are like the six pillars of the organization. They could be down to one in Quinn Hughes here in short order, which is just kind of mind-boggling to think about. And you know, now in the here and now, you mentioned playoffs and how much is that even worth at this point, but they are still in a playoff race, albeit very, very close with Calgary. Utah's coming on strong. St. Louis is hanging around. Anaheim beats the Canucks last night in regulation, so they're kind of there on the fringes. How would you handicap the Western Conference playoff race for that final spot right now?
Yeah, you know, for me, and it's kind of been this way for a while, I think it honestly comes down to the Flames and the Canucks and what, and you know, goaltending, you just mentioned that too for y'all. I think that's a big question mark, right? I mean, yeah. When Tyler Myers is arguably your player of the game yesterday, you have to wonder about what's going on. But I think, you know, is Thatcher going to come back? Is he going to be able to sustain? And again, like we were talking about the playoffs, do you want to put him through that if his body isn't 100% ready for that? If he's the guy you go to even, right? Like maybe Lankinen is your guy. But for me, yes, it's down to the Canucks and the Flames. And, you know, we have seen this across this league for forever. The Flames might have a little bit of an advantage here because they've got that whole nobody expected us to be here thing going, right?
Yeah.
And so you can play a little bit more free. You can have a little bit more of that chip on your shoulder, whereas, you know, you guys have talked all season about the pressure that the Canucks are under, and sometimes that results in the mindset being, let's just get this over with. And that's not a comment on these athletes not being the best in the world. They are, without question, but this has been a hard road for them for sure.
Yeah, it absolutely has. We'll see how it goes tomorrow night against the Seattle Kraken. And one of these days, Allison, one of these days, we're going to be doing the show and we'll have you on, and it'll be this time of year. And we'll be talking about, like, could the Kraken and Canucks meet in the first round? Second and third in the Pacific Division. It's going to happen. Better times are ahead, hopefully, for both teams. But as of right now, thank you so much, as always, for joining us, Allison.
It is my pleasure, Jamie, and I look forward to that day. I expect it to happen here soon for both sides as well.
I certainly hope so. Thanks, Allison.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is Allison Lucan, Seattle Kraken contributor, regular here on our show when we chat Seattle Kraken ahead of them playing the Canucks tomorrow. Canucks wrapping up their five-game road trip in Seattle at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in. This one from Jimmy in Vancouver. This team has no identity. They have to move on from EP40, Besser, Demko, and all the UFAs that they have. Hopefully they can get some good value in those trades and hope that they can create a core with the new players and prospects that they have. If that fails, then it's only a matter of time before the captain will want out. And yeah, just that sense of what is the identity? What's the identity now? What's the path forward? Again, getting back to the idea of like, hold on a second, who even is the core? Who's going to be the core of this team? I think that's very, very evident watching this team right now and trying to just project and predict into the future about what it's going to look like beyond the trade deadline, what it's going to look like going into next season. Jacob in North Van says, if we don't re-sign Besser, I worry about fallout in the room. Got to keep good locker room guys around. Look what happened when we kept Miller over Horvat. I think the team has to perform at a certain level for to have that be a consideration. It would be one thing if the team was constantly giving its all and had really good chemistry and their compete and effort level was really high. If it was Calgary, and Calgary was in this situation, and it's like, well, this, we really got to keep this guy. He's such a good locker room guy because you're getting good locker room stuff. You're not getting good locker room stuff from the Canucks. I'm not saying it's Brock Besser's fault, but what chemistry are you trying to preserve? What chemistry are you trying to protect? The effort, the compete, the consistency is just not there. So yeah, it might be a tough pill to swallow for the team if you trade Besser as a veteran, as the longest tenured Canuck, a well-liked teammate, all of those things. But that's the business. That's the NHL. And if you don't want management to make decisions like that, then as a team, as players, as professionals, you have to perform an awful lot better. Again, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Noah from Langley says, I feel like there's been very little talk about this new Demko injury. He was a massive part of this core, and it seems like he might be done. Combine that with Pettersson barely playing AHL caliber hockey, and it's looking rough for the Canucks' future. It's hard to be a fan right now. I don't want to say Demko is done. As I said earlier, he's a wild card. Who knows? Who knows what you can reasonably expect from Thatcher Demko in terms of his performance, his availability, his durability, all of that. Whether he'll even be here beyond his next contract. So there's still a chance that he ends up being a really important part of the team, a core part of the team, but it is very much uncertain, very much a wild card type of thing. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and obviously lots of thoughts coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line about Elias Pettersson. And look, guys, I know, I get it. I get the score here. We're all at a certain level tired of talking about Elias Pettersson and his season. It's been basically a year of a pretty similar conversation, and it doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. So I get it. I get that it's frustrating. On the other hand, it also is still the biggest story with this team right now. The single thing you can point to say, this is what's gone wrong with this team this season. There's other things, but it starts with Elias Pettersson, and he was had another very, very poor performance last night. And I do think there's actually one thing I think we're getting wrong about the Elias Pettersson story, believe it or not. I'm going to try to add something new, semi-new, to the Elias Pettersson discourse. Because I think a lot of people look at that game last night and his performance and just the total lack of impact on the game and say, yeah, more of the same. This is what it's been for a year now, more of the same from Elias Pettersson. That's actually not true. It's not more of the same. It's actually getting worse somehow, which I didn't really believe or think before I started digging into the numbers. But it is. Elias Pettersson's performance from a very low point already is somehow getting worse. He has 7 points in his last 19 games since returning to the lineup in January. That's a 30-point pace over 82 games. 7 points in his last 19 games. That's despite still getting first-line minutes and power play time. And again, to my point about it getting worse, before that, before this last 19-game stretch, he was on a 67-point pace, 28 points in 34 games. And again, we all know that's not good enough. It's not close to good enough. He wasn't making the impact he needed to have. But the production was sure a lot better than it has been recently. Go back a little bit farther even. He has 9 points in his last 26 games. 9 points in 26 games. Before that, he was at 26 points in 27, almost a point per game. So even this season, forget going back a year and looking at the drop-off. There's been a massive drop-off just this season for Elias Pettersson. He went from almost a point per game in his first half of the season, his first 27 games. And again, even then, I'm not saying, oh, point per game, no problem. Even then, we could all see he wasn't close to good enough. Wasn't close to impactful enough for the team. But even from that point, it has somehow gone way, way downhill. 9 points in his last 26 games. That's almost a third of a season. That's a sub 30-point pace over an 82-game season. In those 26 games, he's at about 0.83 points per 60. 0.83 points per 60 at 5-on-5. That's like close to the bottom of the league. Over the full season, that would be 386 out of about 420 forwards in the NHL. That's basically like what Sam Lafferty gives you at even strength. 0.83 points per 60. Honestly, that is fringe NHL production. That's like a pure defensive specialist, fourth line center, or maybe a guy who really physical, big hits, lots of energy, but can't do anything with the puck. Some guy you just put out there and hope that he kills some time off the clock. That's the level of performance that Elias Pettersson has been giving the Canucks, not just post Four Nations. Going back to like November, going back for his last 26 games. It's honestly not a stretch when you factor in the fact that he's still playing like 18 minutes a game, getting power play time. And I know he didn't get offensive zone starts last night. I think that's Tocchet saying, well, look, he's not giving me anything offensive. So I just have to get him defensive minutes to give me some sort of value. So it's not as if he's getting the easiest minutes in the world, but still, he's getting a lot of minutes. When you consider his role and what he's produced with that time, it's not a stretch to say that for a third of the season, he's been one of the worst offensive players in the NHL. I thought the game against San Jose was rock bottom, but looking at it now, looking at the trajectory that he's been on just this season, just since November, forget going back a year or 13 months at this point when he was on pace for a second straight 100-point season. Forget about that trajectory. Just in the last 3 months, the arrow is pointing steeply down for Elias Pettersson, and that is very, very concerning. And again, you look at those numbers in context, that's why I push back against people that say, well, you know, this is like kind of like Jonathan Huberto. This is a shocking, shocking level of production and a shocking game-to-game impact from Elias Pettersson right now. And again, it's been basically a third of a season that we've been seeing this, that we've been seeing fringe fourth line type of production in first line minutes from Elias Pettersson. So was the game against San Jose rock bottom? I don't know. I hope so. But I guess if there's one thing following the Canucks has taught me, things can always get worse. That's a nice note to wrap up the segment on. Denny's True North taste awaits with Denny's 100% Canadian beef burgers made with new shredded iceberg lettuce on a brioche bun and all the classic ingredients you love. Randeep Janda will join me in studio next. We'll see if Randeep has anything really sunny and cheery to say about the Canucks and their situation and the rest of the season. He'll be in studio with me for the final hour of the show here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and lots of thoughts coming in. And doing his best Thomas Strance impression and arriving at the studio mere minutes before we go on air. Now joining me in studio for the final hour of the show, he is Canucks color analyst here at 650, Randeep Janda. What's going on, man?
Mic on here, buddy. Good to be with you.
Yes.
I never used to be like this.
I used to be here. One of the most professional guys at the station.
Hours before the show would start, I'd be sitting in the prep lounge, and now I'm just rolling in 30 seconds before
so
we go
to air. Your work rate is mirroring the Canucks work rate, is what you're saying.
Hey, I worked last night, all right? I worked last night. Come on now.
That's true. You always put in a shift, no matter what the team's doing in front of you. By the way, Randeep Janda on Sportsnet 650, a presentation of Bells and Whistles, your new favorite place to catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more on Fraser, right in the Fraser Hood on socials at Bells and Whistles YVR. And as we look at that game last night, you know, look, I don't have to tell you, you've watched them, or almost all of them. The Canucks have had some pretty ugly losses this year, some really, really bad ones. I look at that game last night, and I think about where you are in the playoff picture, the stakes that you like, you need, desperately need points every night out right now to try to book your spot to the playoffs. You're a week out from the trade deadline. You're theoretically trying to make a pitch to management that they should either invest in this team or at the very least keep you guys together to see what you can do. You're playing an opponent that, yeah, is playing better recently, but is pretty mediocre. And you give that performance and blow a 2-0 lead. I don't know if it takes the crown as worst loss of the season, but I look at the reaction we're getting and I'm seeing from fans, like, it's up there just in how deflating and dispiriting it was. It's up there with some of the worst losses of the year to me.
I think in terms of effort, we've seen worse losses, right? When you start looking at how they fell flat in certain games this year right off the bat, where that Islanders game, for instance, didn't have anything in that game, right? You go to a New Jersey game.
Yep.
Didn't have anything.
Kings game here. Yeah. There's been some really bad ones. Don't get me wrong.
But those losses, Jamie, were, okay, you know what? They're flat all game long. It's a miss. This game, and also on those games, there was an implied runway, right? Oh, there's a long season to go. This is a skin in the game type of matchup where you're saying, sure, it's a back-to-back, but you're playing for something. You're playing for seeing the Calgary Flames get dumped by the Tampa Bay Lightning early on. Yep. Maybe they got that news, maybe they're not. It didn't matter. You're playing against Utah. You're playing against a Ducks team that now feels like they might be in it. So the fact that you've got, you know, 20-plus games left, but yeah, you're playing for something here. This is, you know, this is the expectation of, okay, we see the runway and we know what we need to do. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes this one disappointing. It's that, yeah, this is a skin in the game type of matchup. And first period, they actually had a 2-0 lead, and that evaporates because they stopped doing things that they needed to do. And those games early on this year, I felt like those were, let's be honest, at certain points, duds right off the bat.
Yeah.
Like they misfired right off the bat. This one, they had it, and they let it get out of the, they let it slip out of their hands.
Well, and I think a lot of people were feeling maybe just a little bit of cautious optimism going into the Four Nations break, right? Had that little nice stretch of games with the new look roster, and Quinn Hughes wasn't playing in it. I think the big part of that was it felt like they were establishing a little bit of an identity, an ability to play faster as a team, be more responsible defensively, the new guys fitting in and all of that. You come out of the Four Nations, and yeah, you get some time off in there, but you also get, what, 3-4 days to practice in a row together as a team? And that's just completely absent. And especially what's been so noticeable against Utah, against Anaheim, two of the young teams chasing them, their lack of speed. And so now you're looking at it and thinking, well, where did that identity go? And how do you get it back now without a chance to like pause the season again and get back to practice?
Well, I think the identity question is the big one here with this team, right? When at this point of the season, you're supposed to be refining and kind of just making those finishing touches. If you're a playoff team, that's what you're supposed to be doing. You're saying, hey, it might not be perfect. There's no perfect team in the NHL. But at the same time, you also understand how you're going to play winning hockey. And for Vancouver, you're right. In the lead up to the break, we saw elements of that. But can we honestly say that's an established identity? No, we can't. This is a team that just dealt JT Miller, what, a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in new players who lean into that identity of playing faster. that aspirational identity, yeah. I want to call it, honestly, like yes. honestly, right? They're building towards that. Drew O'Connor, you know, he was noticeable yesterday. He's a guy that brings speed. Against LA, Nils Höglander brought that speed, but those are flashes. That's not an established identity. I think that if there's any identity in the last month for this team, it's defensively sound. And even in the second period yesterday, they lost that. And I think that's why Rick Tocchet was especially disappointed in his post-game availability.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, energy that he had matched his team in the second and third period. It was a disappointed, I think, coach in saying, hey, that's not how we're going to win games. You're not going to necessarily outskill. There's going to be faster teams than you as well. But at the very least, Jamie, the identity they have to, you know, lean back on is defensive structure.
Yep.
And that's part of their identity right now. You talk about speed. You talk about, you know, playing a certain way offensively. I still think that's aspirational.
Yeah, well, it's just, I don't know if they have the pieces to do it, right?
Like, exactly.
Just who is a, how many forwards on this team would you say are fast and creative? Like, both, have both attributes. Filipino,
sure.
Even though, like, can he do it at a consistent top six level? I don't know. But I think he's both fast and creative. Got another one?
In the top six? No.
Like, Garland's not a burner. He's no. creative. Höglander's...
You've got some bottom six pieces that you could be like, all right, they're going to add some offense. Like, I think Höglander showed that he has yeah. elements of that. I wouldn't say Drew O'Connor's creative.
No,
I think he's fast.
That's the thing. He's fast, but he's not creative.
Kiefer Sherwood has shown that he's got some hands.
I don't think he's creative, though. Like, are you looking like, oh, Kiefer Sherwood's going to set up somebody else for a goal?
Not consistently. Let's talk... Beginning of this year, he had that element. He was giving you a little bit more, but he's not that player in the top six. So Filip Hedl aside, speedy players with skill, there's not many on this roster right now. So if you're trying to play that style,
yeah,
you're going to also have to redo this roster. And that's what, you know, the conversation is leading up to Friday now, next Friday.
And I just think you look around the league, that's the direction it's going. And not that size and defensive structure and defensive responsibility and all of those things aren't going to still be important. They are. But you have to have a baseline of dynamic skill. Guys who can skate, guys who can make plays with the puck. And they just don't, they don't have that right now. And I don't know how you go about getting it. Now, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know what covers that up, though? High-end skill.
Sure.
And that's where I think I'm thinking about a player like a Sasha Barkov or... You know, not exactly a burner, but he's got such
high-end skill.
High-end yeah. skill, such an intelligent player where if the other guys in the lineup aren't going, he's able to make an impact. He's yeah. able to make a two-way impact, but also offensively. He's got that wingspan as well, which just covers so much ice.
Well, and I think you look at the Florida Panthers as a whole, like Tkachuk's one of the slowest star players in the
sure.
league. You know, Reinhart, not a burner. Bennett can skate, but not a burner.
Verhaeghe's got a little bit, but not like, much.
They play fast, though, because yep. they are so dialed in on their system. And I've mentioned this before on the show, but for all the criticism of dump and chase, like that team loves to dump and chase, but they execute it at a high enough level that it works for them. So you're right. Like there are ways, if you have enough skill and you have the buy-in and you have the right system and all of that, that you can compensate for it. We're just not seeing that.
No, we aren't.
Anything close to that for the Canucks.
And there's a lot of, I think, discussion on, you know, the players we just mentioned, right? Filip Hedl, Nils Höglander, but in the end, if you're able to win your matchups in the top six or at least one of those matchups, it makes life a lot easier. And that's the big gap with this team right now.
Yes.
Of course, it's stylistically, we're trying to figure out what they are. But if you're big dogs, and yeah, number 40,
yep.
isn't able to win his matchups, isn't able to make an impact, you're going to be looking elsewhere in the roster. And which contending team or playoff team does anything without their top six or their top
yeah.
line functioning?
Yeah, you
know, it doesn't happen often.
Your best forward, and really, like, I think people get it a little too. Like, I don't think it's as simple as, well, they traded Miller to keep Pettersson, right? Or it was they were going to trade one of them, and so they decided to go with Pettersson instead of Miller. I think they were going to move Miller anyways. So but still, you're at a position where you traded JT Miller, and Elias Pettersson's a no-show. So you're kind of down your two best forwards, the guys you expected to be your two best forwards coming into the season. That's a tough blow. Like, that's really, really hard to sustain an offense to be a good competitive team when your top two forwards are just basically gone.
Yeah, and that's why I think some of the conversation around Rick Tocchet is frustrating, because I'll hear the conversation of, okay, you know, can he coach better, or is this a system that can work? The man is trying to defend first. right? Like, this is, if this team is going to win games and if they're going to make the playoffs, which I should mention, I still think they have a very good shot. You look at the numbers. They're not going against the 80s Islanders in the playoff racer, guys. This is not the 94 even Canucks, right? Like, this is a team that is going against a hardworking Calgary team, a team in Utah that has a lot of good vibes. They play fast. They got young, dynamic players, but they are far from being, I think, a certainty. And let's not even talk about Anaheim, even though they might think like, all right, we're still in it. We know how flawed they are. But defense is going to have to be the key here. They're going to have to play 2-1 games, 3-1 games. And so that's why I find at times when the conversation about Tocchet, oh, is he playing, you know, is he playing the right system? Is he coaching the right way? You look at that roster, you look at the production, offensive production that even they're capable of, if you open it up a little bit more, I don't think that's a recipe to win games for this coach with this roster.
The Tocchet conversation is really interesting to me right now because I think there are very valid criticisms of Rick Tocchet, and I want to get to one in a second here that kind of came up for me last night. What I take issue with is the idea that, you know, you look at the team blowing the 2-0 lead last night, right? Or the 2-0 lead against LA as well. Sure. The idea that it's like Rick Tocchet is telling them to sit back in a defensive shell in the third period or after they go up 2-0. It's like that's straight up not happening. If you think that's the message from Rick Tocchet, zero chance that's what he's telling the team. Or, you know, well, he's coached all the offense out of Elias Pettersson. No, he hasn't. He would love, trust me, nobody would love to see some more creativity and offensive spark from Elias Pettersson than Rick Tocchet. He is not telling Elias Pettersson to be a shell of him former self. I take issue with that. Having said that, the idea of it, it's like intentional, right? That he is telling these guys to be completely unthreatening offensively. Having said that, after the game last night, Tocchet saying, you know, hey, we had this game plan and they went away from it. We decided to stop going away from it. And this is kind of a similar thing we've heard, right? Like, we're telling them to do X and they're not doing it. You can have a really good game plan and a game plan that would work if the players executed it. At a certain point, it raises a red flag for me if the coach can't get the team to execute. You know what I mean? Like, ultimately, that's your job.
Yeah.
Put out the game plan, decide on the game plan, and then get the players to execute. So I don't necessarily think what Tocchet wants them to do is deeply flawed. I think you can win playing the system that Tocchet wants. But it's also the coach's job at a certain point to get the players to buy into that system.
Yeah, you got to get the results as a coach, whether, you know, the players are executing your style or if they're generating off the power play. Like, this team needs wins. And I think for Rick Tocchet, one thing we know about his system, and he's been saying it since day one, it's physically demanding. That's why Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford had said people need to come into camp the right way. Their program in the offseason has to be followed. Otherwise, you're going to be playing catch up. And Rick Tocchet said that himself, the big summer. The Rick Tocchet big summer a couple years ago, right? Or last year. So I think it's fair to assume that, of course, he's going to ask a lot of his players. And anybody that's played for Tocchet says that, going back to his Arizona days. But at some point, it does start to, you know, with a group that's been here for a while, if you're not getting the results, that buy-in, that belief kind of drops.
Yep.
And there's been a lot of noise around this team all season long. And I feel like we've seen two extremes. We saw last year when this team was fully bought in. They were willing to play with the system. They were willing to buy in. They were willing to work hard. And they reaped the benefits of it. This year, with everything going awry, I think belief and buy-in in a team dynamic is so important. And it's moments like this where one thing goes wrong. And just like that, Jamie, you've lost it.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't lose belief in the system. But in that moment, you're just that will that they had last year. You see it in moments where you're just like, oh, you can't swing the momentum back your way. So I agree with you. I think coaching certainly has to address that, but it worked last year.
And it's a chicken and the egg thing, right? Because the players have to buy in. It's the coach's job to get them to buy in, but the players have to buy in as well. You know what I mean? And I think where I land on this is it's kind of similar to where I was, frankly, with Travis Green. And, you know, Bruce Boudreau is a little different because it was just so obvious they needed a coaching change at that point. I have no problem laying some blame at the coach's feet. But the problem for me is when it's like, well, all you need to do is change the coach. You know what I mean? Like, we're seeing so clearly a pattern repeated here of the players not being able to consistently buy in and play to a certain identity. Maybe there's coaching stuff that needs to change. That's fine. That's a totally fair opinion to have. I can buy that. But the idea that it's the only thing holding this team back, and you don't have to change the coach, and you don't need to change the players, I have a really tough time buying that.
Yeah, you start to turn into a market that churns out coaches, right?
Yes.
And like we've seen it before. We saw it with Buffalo. We saw it with Edmonton. You don't want to be in that space. And I'm not saying that excuses bad coaching. In order to avoid that situation, that you should just say, hey, hang with the guy, stick with the guy. But the guy won the Jack Adams Award last year. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about somebody who...
He was just on the bench for Team Canada.
Exactly. He's very respected across the league, amongst the hockey circle. There is a lot of respect there. This is, you can't go from being the best coach in the NHL one year to all of a sudden, this guy can't coach. So I don't agree with the assessment that are there things that Rick Tocchet and his staff can do better? For sure there are, right? Some of the deployment haven't been, it's been confusing. They've taken out the patented Travis Green line blender maybe at times a little too much. You know, you talk about not getting the guys to stick, have that buy, and that's a coach's responsibility. That's an element too. But this does come down to the players. This comes down on individuals on this roster to elevate their game. And we haven't seen that. When your star players consistently aren't there, aren't able to make a positive impact on a game.
Yeah.
And one line that Rick Tocchet said before the Four Nations faceoff sticks out to me when it comes to Elias Pettersson. He was like, I want him to go there and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Try stuff. You know what try stuff means? Be creative. Do your deeks.
Yeah.
Dangle some guys.
Take a shot or two.
Pick some corners. That's a coach begging for offense, begging for confidence. I don't know what else you can say. Like, your big dogs, they got to deliver at some point. And
yeah.
Quinn Hughes is doing his things. But with Elias Pettersson, like, this is going to be the question the rest of the way, right? And it feels weird because every day we talk about this. I know the fans are probably frustrated. I know you and Drance are talking about this. We talk about it on air, off air. You mention it. But ultimately, that's the conversation here. You're only going to get as far as your top players. And if you're getting buried in your top six matchups, or if you're not able to, you know, generate speed through the neutral zone. I thought it was the LA game where you could see the want for Elias Pettersson to try to attack with speed, but the speed isn't there. And that ultimately comes down to it. You need him to deliver and win his matchups, or at the very least, Jamie, be neutral.
Yeah, and the funny thing about the whole, you know, well, the star players can't thrive under Rick Tocchet thing is Quinn Hughes has ascended to new heights in his career. Norris winner, like, I think a legitimate Hart Trophy candidate this year. And I guess you can say, well, he's a defenseman, it's different. But, I mean, realistically, this is a star player who, from what we can see on the outside, has fully embraced that work ethic and that professionalism that Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin and Rick Tocchet have spoken about. How many times have we heard, either off the record or on the record, them hold up Sidney Crosby from Pittsburgh as the kind of gold standard of what they want? That's how you go about being a winner in the league. You work like Sidney Crosby. I don't want to say Quinn Hughes is at Sidney Crosby levels. He's one of the obviously most accomplished, winningest players of all time in hockey, so I'm not going to put him in that category. But the way he's elevated his game is remarkable, and he's been rewarded for it by the team, right? He has so much trust. They put so much stock in him. They rave about what he does. It just makes the failure of other members of the team to do that stand out even more clearly. You know what I mean? Like, it's possible. Quinn Hughes is doing it. Quinn Hughes has found that way to go from, I'm a really good player in this league, to I'm one of the best players in the league. Other guys have either stayed where they are or gone backwards. But it is possible. Like, Rick Tocchet and Jim Rutherford and Patrick Ovechkin must be saying, like, guys, just look at Quinn and what he did. Try to find your version of that.
There's an on-ice element of this, which is the guy is clearly not 100%, and he has a fantastic game yesterday against Anaheim. The game against LA was shaking off some rust, but who led that attack in overtime? Who ends up getting the primary assist? Like, he's powering through stuff. Off the ice, this guy's been more than accountable. Remember that day where he talked to media and said, hey, I think it was Ian McIntyre, if I'm not mistaken, and how he felt responsible for a lot of what was going on in the locker room, right? This is a guy that I think his mentality is there. You talk about that gold standard, which is Sidney Crosby. Do you demand a lot from yourself and your teammates? Yes. You got to back it up. Quinn Hughes is doing that.
Yes.
Now, the problem is, you've got a team that's searching for identity. You've got players that are searching for their own identity at this point in time, too. Individuals and the collective. And anytime you have that with just over 20 games left in the season, it's a tricky spot. Yes. It's a very tricky spot. And what makes this even more complicated is you've got the trade deadline in exactly a week. So even though Quinn Hughes is doing all the right things, even though he is having still, even though he's injured, a Norris type of season, we're looking at this team and saying, could it potentially be a bit of a wasted season for Quinn Hughes as well? Because, you know, what's happening? What's the medium and long term of this team? Mm-hmm. We know the short term, and I expressed this with the guys yesterday in the post game show. I think if you're searching for your identity at this point of the season, you have to have some real looks in the mirror and say, we're not looking short term. Maybe you still make the playoffs, but you have to make those hard decisions. Yep. You have to make those decisions on impending UFAs and look at the medium and long term. The short term, if you make the playoffs, great. If you don't, that's all right. You're playing for that next core. I heard you talking on the show a little bit earlier on.
Yep.
That's what you got to keep an eye on, no doubt.
Yeah, and man, who is going to be a part of that next core is a wild one. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one comes in. Quinn Hughes is coached by Foot. He said so the other night. Tockett is also a great defensive coach, one of the best in the league. His ability to coach offense is absolutely brutal, though, always has been. Look, guys, yes, Adam Foot handles the defensive deployments. That doesn't mean like he's Quinn Hughes' personal coach. Rick Tockett is the head coach. Rick Tockett has the most influence on all of the players of any member of the coaching staff, okay? We don't need to start carving out credit. Oh, no. Quinn Hughes is only good because of Adam Foote.
That's not
how it works.
This is the, you know what it reminds me of? The old Judd Brackett was responsible for this. Jim Benning was responsible for that. Let's stop that. And also, if we're going on facts, Quinn Hughes has said Rick Tockett is the best coach he's ever had. He didn't say Adam Foote.
No.
He said Rick Tockett. And if we're playing that game, guess what? Sergei Gonchar is also on the staff.
Yes.
Are we not going to give him credit?
Yeah, like, we do not have to do that. All right. And by the way, the thing about Rick Tockett has been brutal. And people are like, well, you know, take out the first 50 games of last year and Patterson's been brutal under Tockett. It's Tockett's fault. If you take out the games where he's played really well under Tockett, then yes, he's been really bad under Tockett. But even go back to that first season where Tockett took over under Boudreau. Hey, he coached like, what, 30 games for the team that year? Or after Boudreau, I should say. So those 30 games, 50-ish last year, Elias Pettersson played like 80 games under Tockett at a 100-point pace, at an elite pace. So what? And then all of a sudden, Rick Tockett said, you know what? I'm tired of seeing this guy dominate. I'm going to tell him to stop being good. Come on. Come on, people. We don't have to do that. I'm going to leave it there for now. But just, what are we talking
Rick
about?
Rick Tockett went up to Elias Pettersson and said, you know what? I'm going to turn you into Guy Carboneau.
Guy Carboneau? You turned him into Sam Lafferty, apparently. He's like, this is what I want.
All more defense. All defense, nothing else.
Guy more Carboneau. Of this, Elias. Coaches hate it when they have game-breaking players who score a lot. They're always trying to coach that out of them. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up next. Send your text in 650-650. Randeep Janda is here in studio with me on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Randeep Janda joining me in studio here for the final hour of the show, final segment here. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. So we touched on it just a little bit there before we went to break, but obviously a big part of the storyline now with the Canucks is deadline 1 week from today. In fact, in exactly 1 week, it will have come and passed already. Only two more games between now and the actual deadline. They play Minnesota on Friday, but later, that won't be before the deadline. So they got the Kraken tomorrow and then the Ducks at home on Wednesday. And Drantz reported last week, I think at the beginning of last week or maybe a couple weeks ago, that the team was going to be very curious, paying a lot of attention, management paying a lot of attention to how the team performed in these six games between the end of the Four Nations and the trade deadline, and that would have a big influence on what they decided to do at the deadline. And yeah, they've still got two games left, but 1-3 out of the break with an ugly, ugly loss last night. You looked too slow to keep up with Utah, too slow to keep up with Anaheim. Like, the die has to be cast at a certain point here. I'm not saying exactly which moves they will make, but if you were waiting for a signal from your team about how you should approach the deadline, they've given you the signal.
Yeah, that was not the, even in the win, it was not the most confidence-inducing performance, right? So it is something that it's tricky because, as we talked about in the last segment, you still have a real shot of making the playoffs.
Yes.
You have probably the best shot out of some of those teams. I look at Calgary and they work hard, but there's obviously flaws on that roster too. So how do you kind of make both things work where you're saying, hey, we're not pulling the plug on this season, but at the same time, you have to make smart decisions. You have to make decisions that are based on the medium and long term of this team. And Jamie, with this team, I think you start looking at the UFAs and it has to start with Brock Besser, right?
Yes.
This is a situation where having a player as your own rental, I believe, is the wrong move. I don't think you can walk into the second half or half post deadline having a player that's a UFA and has value. Either he has value to you, and what that is, whether that's a 5-year deal, as Elliot Friedman mentioned, the Canucks might be looking in that direction on the latest 32 thoughts, whether that's a 6, 7, whatever. Either you make that deal happen and that value's in your corner, or use that value and you have to use it on the trade market. Obviously, you want goals in your lineup. Obviously, you want a situation where, you know, there are players that are able to score from your roster. But if that's not going to be something that, you know, is not a player that sticks on your team, I look at this, Jamie, and I say, I don't know how you're going to be able to stick with, you know, with him without a contract. I just don't see that.
Is your laptop okay? It's like a rocket ship's trying to take off.
I'm not going to lie. I was kind of wondering the same thing.
I was
too.
Like, what's going on?
That is my laptop.
Turn on somewhere?
That is, my laptop is making some noise. Rogers IT, if you're listening to the show, please. I'm worried
goodness.
My laptop's going to explode here.
That's the loudest laptop I've ever heard. I thought something was wrong with my headphones.
It's got like 70 horsepower in this thing.
Holy cow. Anyways.
But Brock Besser, moral of the story. You can't, in my opinion, I don't think you
over.
Need a contract or you need a deal.
The own rental is over. It's absolutely over. And even we've talked about this a lot on the show, Drantz and I, like, okay, maybe you trade him and then you take some of the assets and you flip it for a cheaper rental to, okay, so you're not, you get a little bit worse, but not totally worse. You're not totally punting on the season. Does it really make sense to trade a third for Jason Zucker for this team or something like that? Even if you're trading Brock Besser, I don't know. I mean, I get the argument that you don't want to punt on the season, but as you've said, it's not like it's a murderer's row to make the playoffs here. You get Demko back, you're riding Lankinen and Demko, you have Quinn Hughes. I think you can make the playoffs without Brock Besser in your lineup. Frankly, as much as I value Besser as a player, you call Lekkomäki up, you try, like, I think there's still a path to the playoffs, even if you trade Besser and don't bring in a replacement. And I think, like, that's the path right now. Maybe sign him. If the deal works, okay, I don't have a huge problem with extending him. But I don't even buy the, like, well, even if we trade Besser, we got to find a way to improve our offense a little bit. Like, I don't think you do. I don't think you can spend those types of resources on this team.
For this season, I think the solution, if you deal Besser, is, to your point, you promote from within. Lekkomäki, your time is now. Let's see what you got. Obviously, it's a long-term play, but the kid's got a shot. You know he's going to play in the top six at some point. Well, here's an early start. The other thing is, I'm not a fan of that Jason Zucker example. I think getting a rental and you know, basically saying, hey, we have to deal Brock because asset management, but we're going to bring in another, you know, 30-year-old player. I would rather say, if you're going to make that move, is there a 20-something player out there that you can either now or after the season is over, use those assets on them at that point? Don't rush that move. If there's a deal out there, absolutely. Is there a 24, 25-year-old player that's going to give you speed, that's going to give you skill, and give you control on a contract? You make that happen now. If not, you hold on to that asset, and when there's an opportunity in the offseason, after the draft, at the draft, you make it happen there. There's going to be a lot of disappointed teams. There's a lot of conversations across the league right now on, hey, if teams don't deliver, could there be a path to do that? Another thing, offer sheets, right? There's some young players that are going to be potentially up for contracts, and could you put some teams in a tough position? I know with the cap going up, it's not going to be as dire, but are there situations where you might be able to, at the very least, pry away a young player from a team via trade? I look at that. So I'm with you. I don't want to force a move for a 32-year-old veteran to come into the roster and you spend an asset on, but can you spend that asset on a 24, 25-year-old player with a long runway?
Yeah, I think that's what it's got to be at this point, is if there's a trade, as you said, the guy that fits in as part of your long term, maybe. But man, that's hard to get done at the deadline. Like, that's more of a draft thing, probably.
But exactly.
Right? And that's even if there is a player like that out there.
But I understand that. And here's the issue. But why do you need to get that deal done at the deadline? Right. If you're saying from within, we're going to elevate some guys, we want to see what's going on, and you're essentially giving your young guys a punch in the arm. I think one recognition or one talking point is, if this team makes the playoffs, are they a cup contender?
Yeah.
Obviously they're not, right? They're not a cup contender. They're going to be playing against the Winnipeg Jets or the Edmonton Oilers or the Vegas Golden Knights. Looks like the Vegas Golden Knights as of right now. I don't think spending assets on a team to play one of those teams is a smart move. I would rather you hold on to that pick and you say, all right, we're going to load up in the offseason. And once the cap goes up, you can spend those assets. If you deal a Brock Besser, if you deal a Pew Suter or a Forbert or whatever, can you at least have a long-term view on this? You're going to have more teams to probably choose from in the offseason anyways, Jamie. So I understand the trade deadline. You want to be a buyer if the deal's in front of you. You want to stay competitive. I think this team can stay competitive for the playoffs anyways.
Yes.
Even if they just pick up assets and they promote from within.
And you also got to be honest about how much the playoffs actually mean at this point, right? Like, I get it. I get there's money on the line, and that's totally fair. And the players are always want to be competitive. As I said earlier, right? Careers are short. You always want to make that push for the playoffs. I totally understand that. What's going to change? What's going to change beyond this year if they make or don't make the playoffs? You know what I mean? Like, it's ultimately not, as much as we always look at it at the beginning of the year, can you be a playoff team? And that's kind of the one of the bars for success we set. I don't think it's that high stakes a thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, you made the playoffs and you lose in 5 games to Winnipeg. Great. Yeah, it's some extra money. That's nice. Maybe. But does that even like leave the players feeling better about themselves going into the offseason? I don't know if it does.
I think internally that is still a measure of success. Can you make the playoffs, right? Let's go back to the beginning of the year. There was a lot of high hopes in the fan base. I think one of the two people here also made a bold prediction, Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi's preseason predictions, which I don't want to talk about right now. It's not coming across great, but that's the reality, that internally there are expectations. Playoffs mean something.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, are you expending assets to get there? Or are you taking a valuable asset, getting what you get in return for that player, and flipping it immediately? Is there value in that? And that's what I question. I think going for the playoffs with this roster smartly, go for it, right? If the players want to, like, it means something to them, it means something to the management group, but you can't be spending assets, you can't have your own rentals. I think it's a win if you make the playoffs in a, you know, for this group right now, you've achieved something, so to speak. But you can't be wasting assets. I can't even fathom that.
No, absolutely not. Okay, so I said just before I welcomed you on the air, going into my last segment solo, I was going to see if you had anything really sunny and positive to say about the Canucks. It's been a bit of a downer. Sure. Today, and it's a beautiful day outside. It feels like spring is right around the corner.
I got up.
You got
this morning,
anything? You got anything? For
I got
us
up
here?
This morning. I was feeling good, and then I flipped on the news, and it all went to hell real quick. So
and then you started listening to my show.
No,
and you're like, oh, this is even worse. I'm going back to the news.
The sunny aspect of this is a couple of things. Quinn Hughes, you still get to watch a player of the 1% of the NHL, and he might power his team to the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
which I think from a conversation of this is a player right now that's playing at such a high level, and he's not 100%, but if he's capable of doing this, I know there's been a lot of noise. I know there's been a lot of paranoia. I know there's been a lot of heaviness this season. That's one shining light I think any Canucks fan can be proud of. Like every game that I am able to call of Quinn Hughes this season, it's a pleasure, man. Like he is able to elevate his game. I think the other thing is, you know, when we watch a player like Kevin Lankinen come out of nowhere, seemingly,
yep.
and take the crease under obviously not great circumstances for Thatcher Demko, but you've seen some players elevate their game. You've seen individuals that, despite the darkness in this season, you're getting individual efforts. Now, will that mean anything in the long term when it comes to this season over 82 and making the playoffs? I don't know. I can't predict the future. But there has been, for all the talk of players getting traded, mm-hmm. for all the talk of the fall from grace of Elias Pettersson, all the noise, there are still individual efforts that I think give you something heading into next year or into the playoffs potentially as well and give you a chance against some really good teams. But you got to figure out the rest as well. And I think overall, positively, you know, you look at Quinn Hughes, that's enough, man. He's the best defenseman in Vancouver Canucks history already. So Canucks fans, wake up smiling, at least with that.
It is, I hate doing this, but because even there's like the...
Don't do it,
man.
What's
the opposite of the silver lining? You know, like, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like the...
Whatever the opposite of the Midas touch is, anything that you touch
the
turns
downside,
to bleep.
The downside, yeah. The dark side, because it's like, you're right. I think you could argue Quinn Hughes is playing at a level we've never seen from a Canucks player. And I say that knowing full well the level Burray got to, the level Henrik Sedin and Daniel Sedin got to, Luongo in net, Marcus Naslund. I get it. I don't know that there's ever been a better player who's having a better season than Quinn Hughes is right now. So that's awesome. You're right. And you get to watch that every night. And you get, you know what, 23 more games here of watching Quinn Hughes operate at that level. You're also neck and neck with the Calgary Flames for a playoff spot, despite getting that performance from Quinn Hughes. So
you pull me back in Godfather 3 style.
I think you're totally right. I think you're totally right that it is a bright side. It's just tough to be like, shouldn't the team be a lot better then? You know what I mean? I don't know. But you're right. It is a bright side. I'll give you one, too, though, here.
Okay, all right, please. After taking down my thing, you have to make sure.
You're right. You're right. But I'm just saying. Anyways.
It's just therapy, man.
My other, I do legitimately think, and despite how it looked last night, which was ugly, for the first time in a long time, you look ahead to next season, I think you can be very optimistic. You can be optimistic about what the blue line is going to look like. Because I like what Marcus Pettersson has brought. Obviously, you've got Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek. DPD, tough night for him last night, but generally in his, you know, still very young, has shown very well early in his NHL career, has earned a ton of trust from Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff early. Tom Volander coming. That looks a lot different than it did even earlier this year when it was a lot of Desharnais and Noah Juulsen. And sorry to Noah Juulsen, the team did announce that he had a surgical procedure. He's going to miss about 12 weeks. So unfortunate for Noah Juulsen and his career because he's done a lot for this team and given a lot to this team. But all of a sudden, the outlook on the blue line looks way, way better and way more positive than it did 3 or 4 months ago. So that if you are looking for the bright side here, I think that's real. I don't think you even have to strain too much to see that. Again, yes, there are major questions up front and how do you fill those? But like, I think you should expect them to have the best blue line they've had in like 10 years going into next season.
And that's I like that. That's a very sunny.
Thank you.
Very sunny. I'm not going to shoot you down like you shot mine down. The reason I would say
go for it.
But if you go and look at we had the conversation about the identity of the team. They are rooted in defense. They're rooted in protecting the middle of the ice. They're rooting in playing a structured game. And having a renovated back end, having a top four defender in Marcus Pettersson. And if you look at what he's been able to do on the PK, look at those numbers. This is one of the best penalty kills over the last month in the NHL. And a big part of that is Marcus Pettersson patrolling the middle of the ice. If you're heading into next season, 5-on-5 with him on the ice and the pieces you mentioned, obviously Quinn Hughes, yeah, absolutely. And for a team that's identity is rooted in defense, as of right now especially, as you're trying to figure out their forward mix, you need that. You need somebody that's solid in the crease. I think Kevin Lankinen is showing over this season he can be that. Obviously, that's a challenge to him to be better every season. There's some uncertainty around Thatcher Demko. You know, if he comes back, you have more faith in him. If not, at least you have Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah.
But you need a good defense in front of that goaltender. So I agree with that. I think, you know, that's one area you can look back and say, sure, you might have had to take away from the forward group to add to the defensive unit. But if a strong defense is the way that this team is going to win games moving forward, you need that back end to be, you know, a good one. And so far, they're stepping in the right direction. I think Elias Pettersson, quickly on him as well, we were expecting at some point there to be a drop-off, right? And that happened last game. Against LA, I thought there was a couple of moments he had great transition defending. He closed the gap well on Kevin Fiala without taking a penalty. There's another one on Alex Laferriere. But if you look at the drop-off, it was going to happen at some point.
That happens.
Right? It happens with a young player, and that's fine. That's going to happen.
And I wonder if maybe he gets the seat in the press box against Seattle tomorrow or something, just as a, hey, take a breather, take a reset, it's fine. But I'm not pressing the panic button on DPD by any stretch just because of one bad game. That happens to young defenders. I think there's still a ton of upside there. And not even just upside, like in the future, but he can help the team right now. You mentioned, you know, Kevin Lankinen, and again, bang on that's a big positive of this year, and they sign him to the deal. What does that mean to you for the future of Thatcher Demko with the Canucks? When you saw that deal that Kevin Lankinen signed, and we start to think about who's going to be here, all of the uncertainty around Besser, Pettersson, Tockett, like I've kind of hesitated to throw Demko in that mix as well, but you know, 1 year left on his deal. Now you sign another goalie to a long-term extension here. Demko will be eligible for an extension in the summer. We know all the the injury issues and the durability issues. How do you kind of look at the Canucks goaltending situation going forward?
I feel like it has to be a wait-and-see approach, right? It's coming down to the health of Thatcher Demko. If he can string together months of play and play at a high level, I think that's when you start thinking, okay, there's a future in Vancouver. But Jamie, if a player is not healthy, if a player can't get on the ice consistently enough, and I feel for Thatcher because, you know, he suffered an injury that nobody ever had heard of in the hockey world. But it's the reality of the business. You have to show what you can do on the ice. You have to show that you are available and that your body can take it. This has been a tough couple of years for Thatcher Demko. And before you sign up for anything, you have to have the ultimate faith that this player is able to perform at a pretty good level, as even as a 1B goaltender, because any extension is still going to be some decent money. So, you know, with Kevin Lankinen now being signed for $4.5 million, he's got the 5-year deal. It gives you that security blanket to say, if it doesn't work out, we've got a backup option. If it does work out, you've got a heck of a 1-2 punch with the cap going up. You know, we'll see. Obviously, Thatcher Demko's price is going to depend on how he plays. But if that next extension is not that high, you've probably got a decent number with the cap going up. The percentage is going to be smaller. You can dedicate a little bit more to the goaltending department. But this is going to be entirely dependent on how Thatcher holds up and how his play is. So I think if you're the Vancouver, you have to take a wait-and-see approach. You're not in a rush to sign any deal. You got to see what you're potentially signing up for with Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, I guess the big question is, does Thatcher Demko want to be part of a tandem with Kevin Lankinen, right? Like, because that's built in now. If Thatcher Demko is choosing to stay in Vancouver and choosing to sign an extension in Vancouver, like, Kevin Lankinen's not making backup money. Even when the salary cap goes up, he's not making 25 games a year money, right? He's making 40 games a year money or something really close to that. He's making tandem, you know, 1B to a 1A money. I'm wondering if Thatcher Demko is going to want that, or if can he put himself in a position where he moves into that next tier. He prices himself kind of out of Vancouver.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because the price range now in the NHL is, what, $8.25 million for goaltenders, and they're living in that range, whether it's Swayman, whether it's other goaltenders. you got to hit the ice. You got to be play consistently to prove your worth. And second in Vezina voting last year was great for last year, but unfortunately for Thatcher, he's not a free agent this past offseason. He's a free agent in a couple of offseasons, right? Yep. So you have to show what you can do. You have to show that you can be healthy. So is he capable of being a $8 million goaltender, $8.5 million, based on skill? Yes. Based on availability, as of right now, no. And sure, he might not want to be a backup, but we have to look at the situation where it's at. Are other teams going to be looking at him as an $8 million contract in 2 years' time? Maybe, if he can get on the ice. If he can't, I think you have to recalibrate that want.
Even then, like, it's, man, he'd have to prove a lot next season to kind of earn that money, I think, or earn that the appetite to give him that role from other teams. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big, big uphill climb for Thatcher Demko. But we know the talent he has when he's healthy, when he's available. We know what he can do. Quickly, before we get out of here, I know it's not really on people's radar, but they play again tomorrow against the Seattle Kraken, and it's another opponent, you know, well below them in the Western Conference standings. They've lost a couple in a row, 3-6-1 in their last 10. If you don't want to say, like, hey, this is a great chance for them to get back in the win column, because, you know, they blew an opportunity to string wins together against Anaheim last night. What are you looking for going into the Kraken game tomorrow night?
I think a response, right? When your coach essentially says you lack the energy, you lack the juice in that
third
period. Didn't like the grit. You want an emotional response from this team to say, hey, we're playing for points. You've got a 1-point lead on Calgary. They've got a game in hand. So you're in the thick of it, right? Like I mentioned earlier, these matchups, they're skin in the game. Like every single one matters even more now because you can see where Calgary is. You can see where Utah is. And as an individual, you've been challenged by your coach. I'm sure there's, you know, conversations behind the door, closed doors as well, just to be like, guys, that wasn't good enough. Sure, it's a back-to-back, but you have a 2-0 lead, and rather than leaning on your structure, leaning on the style of play that you want to play, which is something we've heard Tocchet mention even going in the playoffs last year, when you're tired, you got to rely on that structure, that style of play. So I think individually, just coming out with more energy, more juice, and sticking to their structure. They know how they're going to have to win games. And you can't deviate from that, even though you might be tired.
And man, if they can just get any of that, some offensive spark going, would go such a long way to making this feel less like a grind here down the stretch. Although, as you said, still with every opportunity to go out and make the playoffs at the end of the season. Randeep, thank you, man. I'm sorry to bring you down into the muck there a little bit.
It's the world we live in.
You get enough of it calling the games for this team.
Hey, I want to say I have a great time. This is a hell of a lifestyle that we live, right?
It is pretty good.
But, of course, you know, bad loss by the team. Near the trade deadline, there's going to be a certain mood in the city, and I understand that.
People are going to be upset, absolutely. All right, that's Randeep Janet. He is the color analyst for the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, and of course you see him on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, as well. The Canucks play the Seattle Kraken tomorrow at 7. Of course, full game coverage here on the station. We will be back on Monday. Drancer will be back in studio. Final week going in to the trade deadline. And just a reminder, we'll have special coverage of the trade deadline next Friday. Drancer and I will be on from 10 to 1. So a little earlier and an extra hour of Canucks talk covering everything that happens in the NHL. And of course, everything the Canucks do at the NHL trade deadline. Have a great weekend. We're back on Monday here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.